You're listening to episode 368 of the UAV Digest. I'm Max Flight.
And I'm David Vanderhoof. Hello, Max. How are you?
I'm doing well, David. How are you?
Good. I forgot we changed the rules. I was waiting for you to finish this sentence.
I know. I was curious to see if you got tripped up by the change.
Well, we assess, adapt, and adjust. You know, that's what we do here on UAV Digest. So we've got, for topics tonight, we've got another pilot program, UAVs or UAPs, an Amazon coupon, which was kind of cool, attritable, I love that word, attritable UAVs, legal news, and a video and a cartoon of the week. So you'll definitely have to go out to the website to see the cartoon about our favorite little helicopter on another planet, good old Ginny, or the Ingenuity helicopter. So should we get started?
David, let's get started.
All right, our first story comes from Engineering and Technology, AI-based system to support world's first mesh network for drone delivery test. It's another pilot program, but this is occurring in Israel. Airways is participating in a unique technology test. Delivery drones will use AI and operate in mesh networks. This sounds a bit fishy, Max.
Well, this is a change. This is a little bit different because delivery tests in the past have tended to operate in drone corridors. The basic strategy is to establish a corridor for delivery drones and to utilize that. But there are a couple of shortcomings with that approach, with drone corridors. One is it limits the number of delivery drones because you've got a fixed space there. If a point in the corridor goes down for some reason, well, then the whole corridor fails. It's like a container ship in the Suez Canal, right? When it goes sideways, you can't get through.
I actually think they've got it sort of off the side of the canal. But this is not the UAV Digest, not trans-canal shipping.
And then there's one other area where drone corridors are an issue is that the whole concept doesn't really scale to commercial volumes. You know, a corridor works if you've got a couple of drones going up and down it. But if you've got massive quantities of drones, that can be a problem. So what Airways is looking at here, and that's Airways with a Z, they're looking at a mesh system that doesn't have the limitations of a drone corridor system.
What is a mesh network? Well, evidently, a mesh network, humans can't manage a mesh network. So the drones are going to have to fly for themselves. AI is needed for each drone for quick decision making. So if you can imagine a network of aircraft on various levels, various speeds, etc., all of which have to think for themselves to operate in that space. In the test, five separate delivery companies are used. Each use their own UAS service system. That's kind of important, Max, because we've talked about corridors, and they sort of been, to go back to your word, containerized. The corridor is managed by a specific organization, and all the drones are flying with those parameters. There aren't a mix-up, but in real-world technology, you're going to have different drone companies following different frequencies, different procedures. That's just the nature of the beast is. So what happens then, Max?
All the drones are managed by the Airways UTM, and this system manages fully autonomous operation across the drones. This is fairly fascinating. And there's also efficiencies, you know, when you're using a mesh network of drones that can follow different paths. I think this really is important in terms of scaling up ultimately to something with volume. And it's a 2-year test program. It was organized by the Israeli Innovation Authority, and they're collaborating with the Ministry of Transport and the Prime Minister's Office.
Personally, I think Israel is kind of a really interesting area to be doing test cases because they have both open space and fairly sophisticated cities to work this through. So you're getting a little bit of everything, and it's a very crowded space because there isn't a lot of Israel is a very small country. So we forget that the United States is pretty big, and, you know, even the corridors in upstate New York are fairly sizable, 100-mile large areas that provide large operating spaces, whereas in the case of Israel, you don't have that. So, Max, I saw this story, and I thought the next one. I read all of it, and this is from our favorite, my favorite website, The Drive, and I didn't know if we should dive into this, but I didn't want to give it drop the hint that it's about UFOs, but it's about unmanned aerial phenomena, or UAPs, or UASs, or UAVs. The Navy can't seem to figure it out, and this is the United States Navy, and it happened over multiple nights and over multiple ships. And The Drive has gone out of their way with FOIAs, or Freedom of Information Act, to document this unusual events. I don't know how to call it, but it's got the Navy perplexed.
So the title of the article is Multiple Destroyers Were Swarmed by Mysterious Drones Off California Over Numerous Nights.
Drones in quotes.
Drones in quotes. Now, this occurred in July 2019 around California's Channel Islands. And so it occurred some time ago. Well, as many as six drones pursued these naval ships, and they flew in low visibility conditions. They performed, in quotes, brazen maneuvers. And there was an investigation. The investigation included the Navy, the Coast Guard, and the FBI. And there wasn't too much made of it, no real conclusions drawn as to what was going on here. But The Drive conducted their own investigation. And like you said, David, they used Freedom of Information Act requests to get information that was not previously public. And this is really the fascinating part. It says that their investigation, and I'm quoting the Drive article, utilized hundreds of gigabytes of automatic identification system ship location data to forensically reconstruct the position of both military and civilian ships in the area during this strange series of events. They really did some research here.
You know, we talk about tracking airplanes, but you can now track ships and cars and trucks. I mean, this article is huge. So what happened was the first destroyer, the Kid, found that they were being followed or interacted with by six lights. The onboard photographic intelligence team was activated, otherwise known as the Snoopies. Communications were restricted and they started locking down. And then they notified other ships like the Rafael Pereda, and that one reported there was a light flying over the helicopter deck on the back. I mean, when they say brazen, these drones were actually over the ships
and following them at speed. I thought that was interesting, right? They were hovering over the deck, but the ship is moving, so they were matching the speed of the naval ships. And on the first night, all this occurred over a period of about 90 minutes, which is interesting because, as the article points out, there aren't any consumer kinds of drones that have that kind of a flight duration. You're not going to have a quadcopter out there generally for 90 minutes. But the next night, there were more sightings. And there was even some sort of corroborating evidence. Sightings. There was a cruise ship passing, and their first thought, well, I don't know if it was the first thought, but one of the thoughts was maybe these drones are coming from this cruise ship. The cruise ship said no, and in fact, they had also seen five or six drones that were maneuvering out there over the water. I think on the second night, all this was observed over a three-hour period, even longer.
One heck of a three-hour tour.
So The drive has sort of pieced together a lot, more information than had been publicly released previously. They had access to emails and ship's logs and things like that. And they called them UAVs, and they being the Navy called them UAVs as they recorded what they were seeing. But I don't know, David, final resolution, it appears.
It is kind of scary. You have warships that are out on patrol, and really the Channel Islands are right off the California coast. They're really not in a place where you can fly UASs line of sight. So they were being, if they are UASs, they were being flown BV loss. You know, okay, if they're flying BV loss, where are they flying from? You know, are they flying from the mainland? The drive says that the ships were not that close to the mainland. You're talking about drones that were flying BV loss, flying long-range BV loss, interacting with ships. You know, I'm sort of surprised that the Navy didn't open fire. Flying over the helicopter deck of a destroyer seems to me would be a threatening event. So it's a very long article, but it is definitely worth the read because it's just so strange. And a lot of factual evidence leading to, okay, after we've looked at it, and I think the drive did even a more detailed depth look than the United States Navy, Coast Guard, and the FBI. Their conclusion is, we don't know. And look for them to do a follow-up as they get more information from the Freedom of Information Act. But when you look at the ship's logs, you know, and they have literally images of the ship's logs where people write down what was happening at the time on the bridge, which brought some love to my heart because this week would have been my father's 96th birthday, and I could see him scribbling these kind of things down. So I thought that was kind of cool, seeing these handwritten notes going, well, we saw something, we told the other ship, but we still don't know what it is. So very, very interesting, definitely a must-read article.
Yeah, for sure.
Well, it's not often that we advertise for anything, but I know we get a lot of people who ask, well, what should be my first drone? And this came up in my feed, and I thought, you know what? It's got pretty good reviews, and it's a great way to get a decent drone at a very inexpensive price. And as we record this the last week in March in 2021, the Thompson D25 4K camera drone is listed on Amazon for $99.99, and you can get it for just about $60.
And this comes from BGR.com. There's two coupons. If you go to the Thompson D25 in Amazon, U.S. Amazon, don't have any idea what Amazon in other countries is doing, but in the U.S. anyway, yeah, it listed for $99.99, but there's a coupon code you can click right there, and that gets you $20 off at checkout. But according to BGR, in addition to that, if you use the coupon code TomZonD25 at checkout, you get another $20 off. So that's where you get to this final price of $59.99. The TomZon is the D25. It's 4K camera on this drone. It's a foldable drone. It looks a lot like a DJI Mavic or the one of the Holy Stone foldable drones. I don't know if I want to call it a knockoff, but it looks pretty similar.
Yeah, it's that square body with the camera in the center with the arms that fold into the body or fold out to the body as a quadcopter. So the customer reviews are 4.0 out of 5. And there's 444 ratings, so it's not like this is a brand new product. There's a lot of ratings, and 48% people have given it 5 stars, you know. So if you're looking to start, it's a good way. You know, spring's coming, time to go flying here and on the northern side of the world. You know, and $60 is a good value to start off with. So there's our hint and tip, and no, Max and I are not getting any benefits from this. It's just... something like this, when it occurs, if somebody else sees something, we'll be happy to help people find a good way to start.
Right. We'll have a link to Amazon in the show notes. It's not, by the way, it is not an affiliate link.
So we're just doing it to help you folks. So attritable. I love this word, attritable. Bell sees its APT cargo UAV as being attritable in combat. And we've talked about this aircraft before on 355. The Bell Autonomous Pod Transport, or APT, will be attritable, meaning that, you know what? If it goes boom, it's so cheap, no one's going to care.
I don't know if others are using this word, but the military has been using this word, it seems like, with greater and greater frequency. But that's just it. The idea is a system that, maybe it's not as robust, maybe it doesn't have the extensive maintenance plan that costs money and all of that, but it's at a lower cost. So in the case of an attritable drone, the idea is you can, or the military can procure them in greater numbers. And if they get taken out in combat for something, it's not great, but there's more where those came from. So the Bell ATP, Bell is saying that it now believes that it can produce the APT cheap enough to be considered attritable. That, of course, is it's a tail-sitting VTOL that we talked about, David. Isn't that right?
It takes off vertically and then flies horizontally as a biplane, kind of. The four wings sort of become together. In 355, we said that it flew with 110 pounds of payload over an 8-mile radius at Fort Worth, Texas, the home of Bell. Over 300 flights had been completed, and it can transport up to 36 MREs, yummy, 72 water bottles, 64 magazines, and 5.56 ammunition and a gallon of fuel. Notice that these are not necessarily primary munitions or something that you'd be sending to the front line. MREs, if you don't know, are meals ready to eat. Water bottles and magazines, that's pretty self-explanatory. You're flying this in really a non-contested airspace. But that being said, if somebody happens to take a pot shot and get lucky, you're not losing a whole heck of a lot, you know? And the government, when we're spending billions of dollars on F-35s, also has things to do, and sometimes it's easier to do something on the cheap. Militaries go in cycles. In World War II, the United States built thousands of Sherman tanks. They weren't the best tanks. German tanks were the best tanks. Russian tanks were better tanks. But we could produce thousands and thousands of Shermans a day. So if you lost one, there'll be another one around the corner. Whereas the Germans and the Russians had much more higher value tanks. And then history swings, and the Russians built thousands of MiG-21s, and they were built cheaply. And if they lost one, no big deal, while we were building Phantoms and other aircraft that if we lost one, it hurts because it was so. Again, this sort of swings back and forth, whether technology is, you want the state of the art, billions of dollars, or do you want something that you can sort of throw away and go, there's another one. It's not a problem. So I guess, Max, we'll be using the word attritable for
every opportunity,
just because it sounds so good. Well, our next story, Max, was, I don't know if it's getting traction or not, but it definitely is one of the deepest legal stories we've come across that doesn't really involve, well, it involves the FAA, but it's an interesting lawsuit.
This is from the Institute for Justice. Drone operator grounded by self-interested government board fights back. So this is, the subtitle is a First Amendment lawsuit in North Carolina says surveyors cannot stop drone operators from selling photos and making maps. Well, apparently in North Carolina, there's something called the Board of Examiners for Engineers and Surveyors. And I think they license surveys.
Which, I mean, makes sense because surveys are very important documents, you know, and lawsuits and regulations and stuff are dependent upon surveys. You know, when you get your land surveyed, that's kind of an important document and there are standards. So I don't see that there's a problem that there would be a board that would set standards and require you to meet them in order to provide surveying.
Right. Now, meanwhile, there's a drone entrepreneur, Michael Jones, who's flying his drone and taking images, collecting data that he's selling to the person who hired him to do this. So, for example, he was a warehouse, I guess, contracted him to take some thermal image photographs of the warehouse. They wanted to see where they had heat leaks. Right, so that they could address those and things like that. So he started, well, he received a warning from the Board of Examiners for Engineers and Surveyors, saying that, well, what he was doing constitutes surveying without a license. And the board was actually warned that there might be criminal prosecution involved. So Mr. Jones discontinued his flying at that point. A reasonable person would. But now the Institute for Justice is involved in this. And what they're saying is that it's a First Amendment issue. It's a freedom of speech issue because photographs are a form of what falls under freedom of speech. And that he can't be Jones can't be prevented from taking a picture of someone's warehouse with a drone and selling it to the warehouse or whatever the application is. They can't restrict that. So this is going to be, I don't know where this goes next or if this is getting traction or not.
And Jones does say, interestingly enough, that, you know, he does specify that none of what he's done has been used for legally to set boundaries or proper surveying, you know, and you're not using the drone to say that that property line is 6 inches farther west than it's shown legal in there. I mean, you know, I kind of feel like the board is sort of overstepping their bounds, not because we're a drone podcast that we're supposed to side with the drone operator, because Max, if you've listened to the show long enough to know that Max and I try to take a realistic look at everything, and we have your grounded files. But in this case, I kind of think that North Carolina has stepped a little too far, or, you know what, maybe they shouldn't have sent the threatening letter first. Maybe they should have had more of a discussion to find out what's going on.
Well, also the undertone here is that this board is made up of surveyors, traditional surveyors, and perhaps they are feeling a little threatened by drones and technology for aerial sensing that might make them obsolete. So I'm not saying with certainty that the board is motivated by protecting their own livelihoods and profession in the face of technological change. But there is that little tinge to it in here. That may be the case. Don't know.
Can you imagine the board, you know, I was thinking about this the other day when I was reading this article, you know, technology changes, okay? And in this case, if he was actually doing surveying with the drone and doing legal surveying without a license, I got it. But, you know, can you imagine someone who used to use a sextant and a data rod suing some people who picked up a GPS surveying system where they used a GPS logo? I mean, you're suing the technology because the technology is doing does better work than what you're capable of doing with your current technology. But that being said, if he was actually doing surveying and the warehouse was going off to say, to sue the guy next to him, saying that, well, this drone flew over, and if you see, our property line is a foot beyond where it is, you know, I would have an expectation that, yeah, you know what, he might have overstepped his bounds. But it's going to be one of those interesting things that how does this cascade into other aspects of flying UASs?
What others, and we've talked about a number of them, but other professions that are impacted by the technology that's possible with
okay, use aircraft. The word threatened, because that's really what you wanted to use.
They are threatened, yeah, yeah.
But you know, Max, when I go to the beach, I see seashells wash up on the shore. I see, you know, seagulls, or occasionally, you know, I never get lucky to see a BQM 167 full-scale aerial target wash up on my beaches. Yeah. But evidently in Florida, that can happen.
This is a target drone. And I guess that normally these have a parachute for when they don't get shot down, or maybe when they do.
Well, the full-scale, okay, this is a, believe it or not, it's a drone. Long before everybody else was talking about drones.
It's a real drone.
It's a real drone. But the BQ-167 is built by Ryan Technologies. It's a almost supersonic drone that they use as what they call FSATs, full-scale aerial targets. And they're used primarily by the 33rd Squadron, and they're flown over the Gulf of Mexico. It's a chance for modern aircraft to shoot down a living, breathing thing. Now, they're designed to take a beating and keep on flying, but they don't have landing gear. So what happens is usually they have a parachute, it deploys and drops out at sea. And believe it or not, the United States Air Force has ships or boats, and they go out to the Gulf of Mexico and they pick up the drone and they bring it back and they fix it and then send it again. Occasionally, they lose one, you know, and they can't find it, and, you know, it sinks or whatever. And clearly, when there's a heavy storm or some strong winds, in this case, this little lone drone decided to crawl upon shore like our ancestors did. You know, she was sick of being a little fish, and she decided to take all of her orangeness and show up on shore, much to the delight, surprise, and chagrin of the United States Air Force. But kind of a neat thing. Check out the article, because there's a picture of this bright orange target. What I thought was kind of cool, Max, was it even looks like it purposely beached. You know, the nose
kind
is,
of does, yeah.
It's not sitting on the side of the beach. It looks like it's like, I'm here, take me back to my brothers and sisters. So
it's a pretty good size thing. What is that? Maybe 20 feet long or something like that?
It's the size of a small airplane.
Yeah.
I mean,
yeah.
It's a jet airplane. It's just designed to be shot at.
Can you imagine walking down the beach, strolling down the beach, come around the corner, and there's this big drone sitting there.
And it wasn't there the night before. So, you know, and that's when you immediately start thinking, well, maybe I had a little too much to drink last night.
Yeah.
But Max, you knew it was coming.
Yep.
You knew it was coming. We've talked about it. And now that I'm cohabitating sort of in Delaware, Ocean City, Maryland is not that far away. So guess what? I'm going to go look at least once during the summer. This is from WMDTMaryland.com. Drone shows coming to Ocean City, replacing the fireworks show. Now, on the East Coast, we have boardwalks. Ocean City, Maryland is one of the largest ones. And usually, like once a week in the summer, on like Friday nights, they have fireworks shows, besides the ubiquitous 4th of July fireworks show. But this year, something different.
The town of Ocean City, I guess, didn't spend too much money on fireworks last year because there weren't too many people around visiting. And so they saved the money, and they saved it so that they could switch over to drone shows to replace many of these fireworks displays. Now, the city, of course, isn't doing this themselves. They've contracted with a company to obtain the drones and to manage the shows. They do mention, though, that we will see for real live shoot 'em up in the sky, sparkle, sparkle fireworks on the 4th of July.
And when he says shoot 'em up, he's not saying the fireworks will be going off next to the drones simultaneously.
No.
We're not shooting down the drones on 4th of July where by the rocket's red glare. But Max, what I'd love to know is, even beyond the cost of having the money they saved last year because of the pandemic, what the cost savings is for a drone show over a fireworks display. Let's face it, fireworks are the ultimate attritable item.
That's right. Yeah, you'll watch it once and that's it.
And I was thinking a little bit of it, you know, and these boardwalk fireworks shows they're not Disney. You know, when you go to Disney every night, they put on the most amazing fireworks show on the planet. And 4th of July fireworks are always spectacular. But these boardwalk fireworks shows are kind of cool. They're romantic and stuff. But if you're down for a couple of weeks or you're a resident and you go down, the fireworks show by the third week looks pretty much the same. But you know what? With a drone show, every week could be just a little different.
Yeah, software change.
I'd be curious to see after this experiment what the feedback was, positive or negative, and if there was any cost savings by using UAVs and not one-shot explosive devices.
Well, like you said, we knew this was coming, and Ocean City is stepping into the breach.
Ooh, good pun, especially talking about the fireworks. Well, it's not normal we do this, but I had to laugh. And I'm not going to spoil it for you, so you're going to have to go out to our website to see it. And you do that by going to theuavdigest.com/368. But we've got a cartoon of the week of our favorite little Martian helicopter, which I thought was very funny, and you should definitely check it out because we had the announcement. Ingenuity is getting ready. They've got the airfield picked out, and Perseverance is driving her over there, and they dropped her protective shield, which caused a bunch of people to be upset that Perseverance was littering on Mars already.
It's not like we haven't left other rovers and other debris on different
planets, we'll give Perseverance the benefit of the doubt. So she's driving off to the quote airport, and we're talking mid-April she'll have a flight.
So do we actually have permission to put this in our show notes? Because it's copyrighted.
But you can credit the copyright. The copyright is underneath.
Do you have a link where you found this?
Yeah, I found it on Twitter. I found it in the public domain.
Well, but that doesn't matter. If it's copyright, it doesn't mean that anybody can...
Well, I'll tell you what. I will text Lee at whatever it is.
Yeah, see if we can...
And say that we'd like to use it in our show notes. With full accreditation.
Great.
Okay, video of the week. First, we've got some follow-up. Max and I really loved the bowling alley. We even liked the theater. But evidently, James Gunn really liked the video cinematography of the theater also. Who's James Gunn? Well, he's the director of the Guardian of the Galaxy series by Marvel. And, you know, sometimes luck crosses your mind, and James offered Jay Christensen, the pilot, an opportunity with Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 3 in London, which was kind of cool.
Yeah, this is what happens when you have a viral video, especially one that has such cinematography or qualities like the one that actually the videos we've been talking about by.
Okay, just put it to the point. It's really, really good.
Yeah, it's really, really good. So here you have this. Fancy schmancy director reaches out, and now he reached out on Twitter. So it's not entirely clear if you know, he really meant what he says. But the first post, he said, oh, my God, this drone shot is stupendous. And then in another tweet, he said, I want them to come with us to London later this year when we shoot Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 3. Christensen tweeted back, what's up, James? I shot this. So we'll see if he actually gets to go. But yeah, fun offer.
I love that series of movies. So the thought of that pilot and that videography in a movie that I like is amazing. So, Max, it's been a long time since we've talked about volcanoes in Iceland. Hmm. We talked about way back in the day when the volcano went off and basically air traffic in the North Atlantic corridor stopped. But we didn't have drones back then or UASs. But now we do. And there's been a lot of videos popping up. And we'll have some links to the show notes. And they're basically just stunning volcano photography that you just, you know. One, actually, the UAS flies like an X-wing over Mustafar, you know, for all those sci-fi fans.
You're such a nerd, David.
I am. No, I'm a geek.
A geek, okay.
I am a geek. And I'm a Star Wars nerd. It's really amazing first-person video footage. The second one is as dramatic. Then there's two Instagram links that we'll have in the show notes. Anthony Quintano flew the second video directly over the volcano, and one of the pictures actually shows what was left of the UAS, because as you watch it fly over you're 99% sure that it got hit by something because there's bubbling lava. So definitely check out the volcano footage. But folks, we've talked about dolphins. We've talked, somebody send us just their day-to-day footage that you just took because you were up flying around. You know, all this stuff's really spectacular for video of the week, but I kind of want to see what you guys are doing. You know, it doesn't have to be spectacular. It could be your dog playing around, you know, but just have some fun with it and send us your links to feedback@theuavdigest.com. You know, I found a very interesting TikTok to add to our collection of animals picking on drones, where a little cat was watching a micro drone and sitting at the top of the stairs, and the cat had enough, and that micro drone probably didn't survive the way it was swatted out of the sky. You know,
I love it. All right. With that, we want to thank you for listening to the UAV Digest. This has been episode 368. Find us at theuavdigest.com.
And you can find us on social media. The best place to find us is on our Slack listener team, and you do that by sending us an email to feedback@theuavdigest.com. You can find us on Twitter and Facebook. You can find Max and I on our LinkedIn profiles. And, of course, you can always find us on the Airplane Geeks podcast. So with that, I'm going to say this is David signing off. Fly safe.
And this is Max.
Thanks for listening.